SiriusXM presents Stanford Pathfinders.
Stanford has 225,000 alumni living all over the globe in 151 countries, and they're some of the most amazing people you would ever want to meet.
A show about how the graduates of Stanford University are changing our lives and the world.
We'll hear very interesting things from business leaders in the technology sector, but well beyond that, the worlds of politics, entertainment, business, and beyond.
Inspiring stories from America's innovation heartland.
It's a place where people look to the future, not to the past, where they don't rest on their laurels. Think about the gold rush. Think about Stanford being formed in the late 1800s. And then Stanford was the beginning of Silicon Valley. And the ethos of Silicon Valley is deeply embedded in the Stanford spirit. It's a spirit of innovation, experimentation. It's a spirit of being willing to try new things and risk failure as long as you fail forward.
Welcome to Stanford Pathfinders.
Today on Stanford Pathfinders, not your typical hip-hop artist.
You know, we all love to read. We do book clubs on the road.
A musician whose career began in a dorm.
I got in an argument with my RA, I guess maybe more like a spirited debate with my RA, Sam, about music and about what was on the radio. And he was basically like, well, then why don't you go write a song?
This week on Stanford Pathfinders, hip-hop artist Kay Flay. Here's your host, Howard Wolf.
Stanford University is known for many things. Turning out award-winning musical stars, however, has not historically been our strong suit. Don't get me wrong, we do have many alumni involved in various aspects of the music business. They have had wonderful careers and added much value to the industry, but they tend not to be household names or legitimate stars. Today's guest on Stanford Pathfinders is the exception to this rule. Christine Meredith Flaherty, better known as Kay Flay, graduated from Stanford in 2007 with 2 degrees. A BA in sociology and a BA in psychology. And she didn't just get 2 degrees, she graduated Phi Beta Kappa. Today, Kay Flay is an American singer, songwriter, rapper, and musician. She has been nominated for 2 Grammy Awards and is known for her truly unique musical style. Her career path is certainly unique for a Stanford grad and something we here on campus celebrate with great joy. Kay Flay, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So you were born and raised in the beautiful Midwest and with a father, I'm told, who was a guitarist and who loved all types of music. So is making music simply inescapable part of your DNA?
You know, it was actually sort of a found part of my DNA in a lot of ways. So my dad was like a hobbyist guitarist and kind of taught me to play very rudimentary rhythm guitar when I was a young kid to sort of back him up while he did weird solos and walked around the house. But music was kind of never part of my life in any meaningful way until I got to Stanford, strangely enough. It was kind of a casual thing. And then, so my dad passed away when I was 14. And after that, I wasn't really playing music ever. So it was certainly, I think, in my blood to some extent, but I had to kind of rediscover it when I got a little bit older.
Got it. So it was a hidden part of your DNA.
Yeah, it was, you know, and I think it's, if I kind of take a bird's eye view of my life as like a narrative, I can kind of see like the latent theme of music in my early life when I was a young kid, but it didn't really come to fruition until I was, you know, 19, 20.
All right, so let's talk about your life. You, I'm told, were a ridiculously good student in high school with great grades and scores, and that led to admission at some amazing schools. And thankfully, you chose Stanford, and then here,
yeah,
you crushed it.
I'm very happy I went to Stanford.
And we are as well. But I got to tell you, your background as a Stanford student is not exactly the background of most singer, songwriter, rapper, musicians. So you must be an outlier in this business. When you travel the road, meet people that do what you do, this is not their background, this kind of education.
Yeah, you know, I will say one of the things that's been really interesting in kind of the travels that this career has afforded me is that people surprise you and surprise me in terms of what their backgrounds are. I think, you know, living, especially being a touring musician, it's such a bizarre job on a lot of levels, and people come to it from a lot of different places. So, you know, there's obviously a lot of people who studied music. So a lot of people who went to like Berkeley or USC or Emerson, you know, schools that like really have these kind of like music programs. So there's a fair number of people who have had these intense university experiences, and then people who didn't go to college at all and kind of like learned everything through apprenticeship and started touring when they were like 16. So it's, you know, I'm always really pleasantly surprised at how everybody's background kind of like weaves together this, I don't know, it's just an interesting tapestry, I guess, of people.
There are many paths to heaven as far as music is concerned.
That's a great way to put it. And for me, going to school and being, you know, a serious student was a great way for me to learn kind of the work ethic, I think, in a lot of ways that this path has demanded of me, you know. And that was something I really enjoyed about my years at Stanford, was just like, I put in a lot of hard work and I was really happy to do that. And I really enjoyed that process of like rigorous learning.
So let's talk about your freshman year at Stanford. You've just come in as a student, and somehow this hidden DNA gets triggered. So give us a sense for how that all got started.
Yeah, so I was living in Otero, and...
Oh, I lived right next door to you my freshman year. I know exactly
where
you are.
And actually, one of my best friends is named Lauren Otero, and I met her in my freshman dorm. They put her in as like a joke. So anyway, shout out to Lauren. But yeah, so I mean, just to set the scene, it's like I grew up in the Midwest, outside of Chicago, and I moved to California, and I'm immediately kind of inundated. You know, one of the things I didn't realize about Stanford was that half of the student population is from California, or roughly, you know. So immediately I'm kind of like inundated in this West Coast culture, and specifically a California culture. And along with that came exposure to a lot of music that I just didn't know about. A lot of, and in particular, a lot of independent hip hop that I was really starting to kind of just connect with. You know, I think the lyricism of a lot of that music really resonated with me and ended up being a bigger kind of theme in my musical life. But so I was just getting super into that. And at the same time, on the radio, there was a lot of commercial hip hop that I really found not creative or offensive. And so I was like, you know, this fired up freshman. And I got in an argument with my RA, or I guess maybe more like a spirited debate with my RA, Sam, and about music and about what was on the radio. And he was basically like, well, then why don't you go write a song?
So your RA challenged you to go write a song because you were complaining about what you were hearing on the radio.
That was a very nice distillation of my long-winded story. There was a kid named Mark who was our like computer dude. He was like the tech staff guy.
Yep.
And he made music. I knew that he made music, and he DJ'd and he did like weird techno stuff. So I went to his room and was like, hey, can we make a song? And we did. And bizarrely enough, that has very, very fundamentally altered the course of the rest of my life.
So when you say you wrote a song, did you write both the lyrics and the melody of the music, or how did that come out?
Yeah. So at the beginning, Mark made the instrumentation for it. And I had never so he was using software that was totally foreign to me at the time. But yeah, he made the beat. I wrote all the words, recorded it. And then I was also taking like a web programming class at the time. So I just built a little website and put the song up. It was just a joke song, but people got a kick out of it. And that summer I went back home to Chicago I was working in a restaurant, and I bought a keyboard and a microphone. I bought an SM58, which is just, you know, the most basic classic microphone you can have. And I started making beats on my own and recording and writing songs. So that kind of first experience catalyzed me taking the means of production into my own hands.
All right, so you continue to make music while you're at Stanford, and then it comes time to graduate, and all of your friends, I imagine, are going off to jobs in tech or consulting or finance, and you decide, nope, I'm going my own path once again, and you're striking off into music. That must have been hard, not only for you, but for your family.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. I think I've described it like this before, and I think it's accurate to say that my pursuit of music has been this like slow somersault down a hill where it just, it kind of just gradually, I said yes to a lot of things. And so there kind of wasn't that shock of like jumping into Arctic water, you know, where it's like, okay, my degree, whatever, I'm going, I'm pursuing music. It was kind of like little baby steps in that direction. So right when I graduated, I actually started teaching the GREs and the SATs. And that was kind of what I did for about a year and a half while I was...
That was
to pay the rent. And it was actually really fun. I enjoyed it. And I have to say, this is in a pre, like, Google Maps on my phone era. So it actually taught me the entire geography of the Bay Area, which I'm very grateful for because my parents live out in the East Bay now. So, but yeah, I think, you know, I think for my family, and this gets back to your first question, you know, I think everyone has, myself included, a really nice feeling of kind of like the spirit of my dad living on a little bit in me because I'm doing music. So I think that there's, you know, my parents definitely trust me to make good decisions. So I think they kind of put that trust in me when I said, this is what I want to pursue. Which I, you know, I'm really grateful for that. And I think sometimes when you feel other people's trust, it holds you to a higher level of accountability, you know, and I certainly have felt that in my life. But I think everyone also had kind of a sweet, I don't know, like full circle feeling about me doing it. So there's, you know, there's that like X factor element too that I think kind of assuaged some of the doubts and fears that perhaps my parents had.
So let's switch gears. Do record companies have too much power in the music industry? Because I know you've had your run-ins.
I've had a few run-ins. Well, you know what? I think in the modern age, record companies have a lot less power than they used to. When you think about kind of, again, the means of production and the means of distribution, there's been a big democratization of that for musicians. You know, so we're at a point where, like, pretty much anyone for very little money can record high quality, can create and record high quality music with a laptop, and disseminate it on the internet for effectively no money. So, you know, and that's a circumstance that's relatively novel. You know, it used to be you have to record to tape and you need to have a corporation to disseminate that. And now it's, you know, it's very much, there's a power that all of us can tap into if we so desire. So I think that that's definitely reduced the power of record labels. But that having been said, there are still things, still ways in which labels are very important, particularly, and I found this with my last album, which is called Everywhere is Somewhere. And we had a few different singles at alternative radio. So that world, sort of commercial radio, is still very, very much tethered to major labels. So record labels are really, really important in terms of getting on the radio and, you know, that being a part of your career. And that was something I found out because my first record I put out independently, and that's a much, much different experience.
So you have a very special style to your music. You've called it genre-defying, and it draws from lo-fi pop and hip-hop with a strong indie component. I mean, there are many ways to describe your music. How would you describe the nature of your music for the people listening?
So I started making music, and I was definitely in a more indie hip-hop world. That was like... Yep. The music, yes, as I mentioned before, that was really like inspirational and foundational to me when I was beginning to make music. And then, you know, as I've gone through a couple records and been on the road and toured, I've transitioned into a little bit more of an alternative rock sound, I guess. So we have, you know, like guitars, bass, but there's still, I think, that spirit. What I've always loved about hip hop and what I think is, you know, part of the reason so many people love it is that it has a really, really strong storytelling and lyrical component. You know, that's the foundation of it. It's a very, this is my perspective on the world, and I'm going to relay it to you in a clever and kind of verbose way. And for me, that's been incredibly appealing. It's to write music in that fashion, but also to listen to it. So there's still, I think, that spirit of storytelling, and I hope a little bit of wit on the lyrical side. But yeah, from a sonic perspective, it's like alternative rock with a few other weird things thrown in.
What's more important to you as a musician, the lyrics or the melody?
Oh, you know what's crazy is, so I thought everybody listened to the lyrics. Like I thought that was the first thing everybody heard because that was the first thing I heard.
Because you were a poet. You thought you were a poet.
And everybody, I remember the first time I was like talking to my my bandmates. So I tour with a live band, and I was like, yeah, you know, I kind of mentioned that the first thing I hear is the lyric, and then I hear the instrumentation and the melody. And he was like, oh, yeah, I have to listen to a song like 20 times before I even like pick up a single lyric. I'm listening to all of the melodic information. So, you know, I do think for me, and I'm like a super avid reader. I love to read books. And I think I've just always had a real love of language and wordplay. Like I find wordplay kind of endlessly fascinating and compelling just for the sake of it. And there's actually a book, and I forget how to pronounce the title of it, but it's spelled E-U-O-N-I-A. It's by this guy, Christian Bach. And basically every chapter is written using only one vowel, words with only one vowel. So like the first chapter is all only words with the vowel E. And the next chapter is only words with the vowel A. And he manages to do it and tell a story. It's like actually one of the craziest things I've ever encountered as a human being. And I highly recommend if you take away anything from this interview, anyone who's listening, check out this book. It's like an incredible feat of the human mind.
This is Stanford Pathfinders. I'm Howard Wolf. More with rapper and songwriter Kay Flay next on SiriusXM Insight 121. This is Stanford Pathfinders. I'm Howard Wolf, and I'm speaking with rapper and songwriter Kay Flay. So speaking of incredible feats, though, tell me, so we're talking about hip-hop, we're talking about telling stories with lyrics and what have you. How hard has it been being a white kid from the suburbs of Chicago without the normal street cred that you think of in hip-hop, breaking into that world?
Oh, well, when you really dig into a lot of rap and hip-hop, a huge part of it is authentic expression. It's about, you know, again, representing where you come from and how you see the world. And as I made music, and this is just something that's always been kind of a part of me as just a human being, is I'm very like sincere about things. I really like mean it when I say things and do things, and I'm really passionate about them. So I think it really worked to, I think, lend me a bizarre kind of credibility in that world because people saw that I was just so, so passionate and also really open to learning, you know, and I was really just trying to represent my viewpoint on the world and my emotional experience and what I was seeing. And so I've talked about this before and been asked kind of a similar question because obviously I do come from a world that on the surface of it seems very different from the world we think of in terms of rap music. And I think it really does boil down to that authenticity and sincerity of how I was making music. And it, you know, I have to say, like, especially in the Bay Area, and the Bay Area is a great place in general, but in terms of the music scene there and the other people making music, they were just super welcoming of me and really encouraged me to continue. And a lot of people took me under their wing. So I think it boils down to that sense of like just being really sincere and really trying. Like I look back at certain things that I did that were horrible. I mean, like songs that I made that were just terrible. Like I'm like, oh my God, I should be ashamed of this. Like it's so bad. But, you know, I really like meant it. I was really trying. And I think that helped me out.
So as you talk about authenticity, I've read that you like, quote, sad girls saying stuff, end quote. So what is that and what makes that so appealing to you?
Here's one of the great things about being a woman, I think. And there's some hard things too in this world. But I think one of the great things is that you're allowed to have a really, really like intense emotional experience. And perhaps even expected to have that. So I think when I say sad girls, I don't even really mean it could be not a girl, but I think girls are just sort of allowed that space a little bit more freely. But I love music that is vulnerable. Fundamentally, and there's a time and a place for AC/DC, which I also love. Also, what's funny, just as a side note about AC/DC, I like my drummer pointed this out to me. There are no drum fills in an AC/DC song. There's just like there is a drum pattern, and it is maintained with integrity for the entirety of the song. So, just something to think about next time you listen to them. But yeah, I think you know the music that in my life has felt like an emotional touchstone or something that helped me to understand my own experience. Because I think that, you know, in my mind, that's the point of music it's a way to relate to yourself in a huge way. You know, it's a way to like shine light on your experience of the world and perhaps to have a different set of vocabulary words to describe it. And I think that music that feels vulnerable and kind of quote unquote sad, though, you know, sad is a pretty bad adjective, like it doesn't encompass the breadth of it all. But, you know, music like that to me it just makes me feel less alone and it makes me, I don't know, I like it.
So the music business can be brutal, especially today when you got to go on tour for so long to sort of make the business work. But you seem to fare quite well in this crazy road touring world. And so what is it about your personality that makes that so? Is it, you know, what is it about you that makes you do so well on the road?
Oh, okay. Well, I think it's two things. I think first and foremost, it's about the people around me. So one of the things this is kind of a thing that happens, I think, in any industry, but like you reach a point at which it's a lot of the same people. You know, you run it, you kind of know the people who do it because the people who stick around, there aren't that many of them. And, you know, what I've found is that your touring party, so that's like your tour manager, your lighting designer, your production manager, the people who run sound for you, the band, like that whole crew. I have such an incredible group of people around me.
So you love these people.
And they're people who, you know, and I've learned how to do this, but like I'm the leader of the ship, right? So I need to curate a group of people who are not only talented at what they do professionally, but people who are like-minded and who share a value set similar to mine. And not everybody wants to run their crew like that. And if you get to be a huge enough band that's playing arenas, you know, that becomes kind of an untenable situation. But for me, if we're touring with, you know, 11 people, I can really work on fostering an environment that's like, you know, we all love to read. We do book clubs on the road.
Hold on a second. You do book clubs on the road, the hip hop artist that does book clubs on the road. And do I understand you also like to listen
to
podcasts?
I'm obsessed with podcasts. This is like, you know, this is a full circle situation for me, Howard. But yeah, I think it's important. I just feel it's important to like engage the mind, particularly when you're on the road, because so much of being on tour, and I think this is something, you know, people, you don't know until you've done it. It's just boring. You know, and it's like people, there's like an old adage, which is that, you know, how do people start like get hooked on drugs on tour? It's between sound check and the show, because there's nothing to do, you know, and often you're just trapped backstage and you can't leave. So it's kind of this like, it's scary time to me that I really desire to fill with like stimulating ideas and stories. So first and foremost, it's the people I have around me, and they're super great people, really fun, really smart, awesome. So that's one half of it. And the second half, And this is something that I've, you know, been working on and improving and kind of building this muscle, is just, you know, my tolerance for chaos and my resilience. Like, you just have to be down for any and all manner of disaster and joy to cross your way. Like, I don't know how else to say it.
So pull out your crystal ball and tell me what Kay Flay's career looks like 5 years from now, 10 years from now. What will you be doing? Where will you be? And what will your music look like and sound like?
I'm not totally sure, obviously. But, you know, I think, and speaking about touring, it is a hard, it's kind of a brutal way to live. And so I think, you know, ideally in 5 years, 10 years, I won't be touring as heavily. I still love playing shows, and I still hope that I have the ability and opportunity to do that. But just not as intensely, so I can like kind of have a life at home. But I think, you know, one of the things I'm excited about, and what it's sort of a path for a lot of, people with artist careers as they, you know, get older and want to like, again, have a more stable life, is to kind of branch off into production and songwriting for other people. While still, again, you know, continuing to make their own music, but maybe at a slower pace or in a different way or with different goals. So that's something I'm really interested in, is working with other artists to help them achieve a vision, you know, because I think, you know, I've certainly learned a lot along the way, and I'd love to have that role for others. And I think additionally too, I'd like to explore other kinds of writing. You know, songwriting is a very specific way of telling stories, and it's a pretty concise one. You know, you've got like 3 to 4 minutes to do it. But yeah, other forms of writing, I'm interested in kind of building up that muscle. So I think, you know, I want to have a career that branches off from this, but hopefully uses a lot of the strange skills I've kind of developed along the way.
Fantastic. I cannot tell you how much I've enjoyed our time together, and thank you so much.
Oh my gosh, Howard, thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Stanford Pathfinders on Sirius XM Insight. Listen to this and other episodes anytime, on demand, with the Sirius XM app.